Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. My next guest is a playwright who's written three plays all about autism. He's from Canada and he's autistic as well. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage and let's learn more about him. See you there.
I want to believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I want to believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't
Hello and welcome back to this very special edition of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I have Mateo. How do you say your last name, Mateo? Esposito, right?
Yes, Esposito, yes, sir. That's right.
I have Mateo Esposito on my show, who is not only an autistic playwright, he likes to sing,
I
and
do.
he's had one of his plays debut in New York City.
That's right, yeah.
Welcome to the show, Mateo.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here, young man. Thank you, sir.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself first?
Absolutely, of course, of course. So, like you said, my name is Mateo Esposito. I am a 26-year-old autistic person. I live in Ontario, Canada, and I'm a playwright. I also am a set designer, a little bit of non-union set design as well. I'm a singer-songwriter as well. And basically, the reason that I do what I do, write plays about autism, is to, like we were talking about before, care that it's okay to be different. It's okay to have autism. It's okay to be a different person. In my opinion, we're all different. If you think every single person is different, there's a saying in the autism community that I love, but it can go to each and every one of each and every person as well. If you met one person with autism, you only met one person with autism, or if you met one autistic person, for people like that, you met one autistic person. That's the same for a human. If you met one human, you only met one human. Why do we have to pe put people in categories when we all
So
act
true.
different? And that's just, honest to God, that's just my saying. That's just what I think. Like, we put stuff in categories. We think some things are normal. Well, nothing's normal. Acting
You
in life
know,
abnormal, if you think about it. Yes, Reed, go ahead.
I mean, you brought up a very good point.
Right.
And one of the biggest things is, I think what divides us as autistics is labels. You have your high functioning, you have your low functioning. You get rid of those labels, we're one. We're all in one. We're autistic. Yes, we are better off than others because we can deal with life better than others,
We have a
but we're
different,
all the same.
exactly. Like we are all one on this planet. Why can't we actually be one? Think about that. For the people who are listening, for the people who are listening, why does this world have to be so tough for anybody? I do know why, and it's quite sad, to be honest with you. I want to get into a little bit of this because, if you don't mind, I'm a very spiritual person, but I also want to talk about moral beliefs. And what I mean by that is, I learned very early on that if I wanted to be in the quote unquote entertainment industry, I have to do three things morally: work hard, never give up, and of course, have confidence in myself and my abilities, and to keep reaching for those goals. Not many people have that, and I learned that very early on at the beginning of grade 7, end of grade 6. It's a very special story if that goes with that. But it gets me teary-eyed every single time because this man who inspired me, he's just one of a kind, and I always mention him, and I'm starting to get emotional now, but it's a good emotional. Like, I don't know if it's not tears of pain. It's not tears of joy. It's just tears that I wish humanity could get better from my story and from the stories of us. So let me paint you a picture, if that makes any sense. So the end of grade, so the beginning of grade 7, sorry, in the summer of that year, I was moving to a new school. I was transitioning from the end of grade 6 to the beginning of grade 7. New school, new something, and I happened to see a great musical called Jersey Boys. Jersey Boys is one of my all-time favorite musicals, not because of the guy who played Frankie, which I'm going to tell you about in a second, and he played the lead as 6 times a week. There was an alternate that played two performances. But he basically, not that, people think Jersey Boys is all about family. It is, but it's also about dreams. It's also about integrity, dreams. Everything that people want in a gritty, honest story about a band that grew up on the blue collar. And that reminds me of so much of myself, honestly, because, and I shouldn't, right? But because they worked extremely hard, Frankie Valli and the Pussies, Frankie Valli, Bob Gaudio, Tommy DeVito, and Nick Massey. They worked very hard to become where they are today, which is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Actually, Frankie Valli is still 89 and he tours. But just to stand there at 89 years old in front of a huge audience and just to even just, you don't even have to sing, just even standing there, God bless the man, because he still has it in him to tour and to do that. And but back to the story. So I saw that show then, honestly, and the Special Education Resource Teacher comes in, because we were writing letters, the fan letters, the stars, and like, and he had a whole list of Disney Channel names and Universal names and everything. I said, okay, I don't want to write to those people, because I know who would write to those people. I'm not one of those kinds of people. But I decided to write to this amazing, God bless this man, Jeff Madden, who played Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys. So the story goes that I submitted I wrote him a one small page fan letter. He played Frankie, the Toronto production, North York, when Dan Capp was around, for those who remember. Dan Capp, it was like the live event of the time. Live event produced Phantom and Joseph in Toronto, even Cats. But the biggest production in Toronto, Canada, was Phantom. For Dan Capp, it was Jersey Boys. And you can see why. The Canadian cast, I have to tell them, it was sublime. Because they put it, not because they were Canadian, they were refreshing, but because they knew how to tell a story. I don't care that we got people from Stratford, Stratford Festival, Shaw Festival, to come together and to tell, basically, this was Jeff Madden's first equity production in Toronto, first Broadway musical, and he friggin' knocked it out of the park. But not just that. So at the beginning, so I wait a few weeks, I'm like, I'm not going to hear from this guy. I even wrote two Broadway actors. So the story goes that the last week of September, I get my teacher, who actually saw the other day, believe it or not, my grade 7 teacher. At the time, he was my grade 7 teacher. Now she's she's acquaintances now, right? Of course. But he said to me at the time, Mateo, you need to go to the bathroom. And I said, okay, like, why not? Let's give, not knowing what was actually going to happen. And not knowing that this man, this experience will actually change my life forever. Let me go in deeper. I go to the washroom, down the hallway. The minute I touch the door handle of the washroom, I see my mom and dad, the CYC, and everybody crowding around this guy. So I thought it was the superintendent to give me an award. Again, it wasn't. It was much more than that. Much more than that. And I thank God, thank my lucky stars, thank God, whoever I up there. Because if this didn't happen, I would not be in this industry today, number one. And I would not be the person who has the most, all the, what that Frankie had and what Jeff taught me. So I go back to the bathroom, sorry. I go and I wash my hands, blah, 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 blah. Then the teacher, I go out to the washroom, go back in and wash your hands. So this was way before COVID, okay? Way before COVID. I'm not trying to be rude. For the people who know what happened, well, we all know that, right? But honestly, so I go in and wash my hands. I come out, I was pissed because now, okay, my parents are here. They're crowding on somebody. She's trying to keep a secret from me. It was like, you're going to be going in and you're going to have a surprise in the room. I don't like that because I'm autistic, right? I don't like, you know what I mean, right? Who would? With an, being an autistic person, I was in grade 7. I was very young at the time, honestly. So I went out. I grabbed my teacher's shirt and I said, you better tell me what's going on or I will freak. And he told me, Jeff Madden, not Jeff, but somebody from Jersey Boys is here to see you. And first of all, chills went down my body, and I knew who it actually was. I was actually scared to actually go into the classroom to meet him. Think, you know?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I've had a similar experience just recently.
But
with my podcast, I reach out to people. My mom and I just came back from watching Shakespeare's Richard III.
Right.
And the lead character was a woman who was a double amputee.
Wow.
By the name of Katie Sullivan.
That's amazing.
She blew it out of the water. I mean, she was
not even good. That's
90. I mean, like you would say, she was 90% in this play. It was all her.
Of course.
All her lines, all her monologue, everything. You felt the emotion. You felt the deceit of the character. And
that's amazing. As
we're leaving the play, my mom and I were blown away, and I go, I got to get her on my show. My mom's like, go ahead, find a way and get her. So I look her up. I find her website. I go into the contact area and I go, hi, my name is Reed Miles. I'm a podcaster. My podcast is all about disabilities. I would love to have you on my show. I've seen you at Shakespeare and you just blew it out of the water. I wait maybe a week or so, and all of a sudden I see an email from somebody I don't recognize. It's her manager.
Wow.
Hi, Reed. And regarding Katie, why don't you tell me a little bit more about your show, we'll see if she's a good fit. So I email him back. I'm like, well, my show is rated number 2 in the autism podcast world. Here's my numbers for the downloads in the U.S. and in England. My show is not just about autism. It's also about those who have disabilities, and I like to showcase them. He's like, okay. Then I send it back. He's like, and then he comes back with me within a day or so. He's like, Reed, wow, you have an impressive thing going on here. Right now, Katie's in the middle of another big project, but let's get her on your show this summer.
Wow.
So, yeah.
How I have to ask you, how is that having her on
They have that email and have him say, she will be on your show. That was phenomenal for me.
Right.
Because
I wouldn't
she imagine. Will be like one of the big three people I've had Dr. Temple Grandin on my show.
I recognize that name very well.
I've had somebody from a TV show called Xena on my show.
Okay.
Who was pretty big, and I'm a big fan of the show, and that was amazing.
Then
her, Katie, coming on the summer. I mean, that's pretty prominent to me because, I mean, not only is she a actress, she's also a Paralympian who's a full-time record holder in track and field. She goes around speaking.
Of course. And I think that's, first of all, that's great. That's amazing. And I think that's what people need. Hope, inspiration. Like when Jeff came, and I'll tell you, my story's not finished yet, but I love what you said. I honestly love what you said. So I walk in back to the classroom, and 3 to 4 feet away, I'm seeing this guy 3 to 4 feet away, and he turns to me. And I'm like, again, no words. I'm like, I didn't even want to go into the classroom. I walked out of the classroom, and I went like this, and I said, if I touch this guy's hand, I'm dead. Fortunately, I'm not dead. But honestly, right, because I'm so scared. Like, I'm in grade 7, I'm autistic, I have all these. And not only was he a nice man, but he gave me my career, basically. Let's just say that. And it gets me so emotional every single time because...
See, what people don't realize is one little inspiration for us sets us off in a path.
Exactly.
Because our minds get locked into that path, it's where we want to go, and that's how we decide what we want to do in our life.
Exactly. And he basically told me to, well, he gave me backstage passes, of course. He gave me a plaque poster, but he gave me a card, and he actually hand wrote the card. And I always get, like I said, I always get emotional, and I don't care what anybody thinks, but he told me to believe in myself, which is, like, honestly,
that's a true message. I mean, we all should believe in ourselves.
We all should have.
Because,
Exactly.
I mean, you think about it, Mateo, there's a lot of us out there who don't.
Of course.
Because we don't have the support. You and I have support.
Yeah.
And we have the guidance. Go on.
Sorry, I agree with you. But I'll tell you something. For the people who don't believe in themselves, they're comfortable. Listen to this. We have to believe in ourselves to the point where we're uncomfortable. And that's where we take the most. If you think about it, because most people don't want to go out of their comfort zone. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. It might benefit you, but you might fail. But you know, fail means first attempt at learning. That's what FAIL means, first attempt at learning. And people don't know that. That's the acronym for fail. People don't know that, first attempt at learning. Like, I'm in college right now, and talking to one of the professors. I'm in tech leader school. And honestly, the guy told one of the professors, told me, yeah, these kids are afraid to fail. I'm like, what? Why? Fail's just a word. It's all in your head. It's all in your freaking head. The same thing with fear. The same thing with fear. Think about it. You can't touch it. You can't hold it. Fear is like the epicenter of your mind. That's why people F with you, because people want to make you fearful for the future. Why do you think they create dumbass scary movies, to use my language? To make you scared. To make you scared for the future. It's that sad that people want to make us so scared of what's going to happen when we should all have confidence. Honestly, I'm sorry, but that's the truth, and ain't it the truth?
No, it's funny. You mentioned something about stepping out of your comfort zone.
Right?
That's what I'm all about.
Good.
Is stepping out of your comfort zone.
Good.
I'm writing a book, and it's basically my life with lots of messages in it. But at the very end of my book, I basically say, listen, you got to step out of your comfort zone. You can't sit in your zone the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Your family's going to die, and you'll be on your own.
Of course.
You're going to look back, and you're going to realize, I could have, should have, would have.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if you don't take that chance,
Of course.
You are going to
of
regret
course.
Your life.
Read, of course. And that's what people don't understand. Like, what is fail? What is fear? Those are words. Those are words.
Mateo, what people don't realize, failing is a learning experience. That's all it is.
Exactly. I totally agree with you, Reed.
And people don't realize, a lot of people, if they haven't failed in one thing, they wouldn't have found the one thing they're good at.
Right.
Now, let's get to know you a little bit better. When were you diagnosed?
Good question. Age seven. Age seven, I was diagnosed.
When you got diagnosed, did you tend to see the world change around you?
Not at the time. Not at the time. Like, honestly, I saw people drift away from me. And ghosting is one of the biggest things that the Specialized community and any diverse community experiences. It's sad, because once we say that, quote unquote, we're different, they want to step back. They actually want to step back and say, I don't want to be your friend anymore. I don't want to be around you. Why is my question? One word, why?
Because it's the imposter syndrome. People think autism is something contagious or bizarre or weird, and we act strange. They want nothing to do with it.
Of course. And you know, that's how we break up this world. That's not how we bring people together. That's how we break up this world, if people think like that. And people are, this is a great saying in Sondheim's Into the Woods, which is a great musical Sondheim. I wish I wrote this line, but I didn't. But I'll tell you guys something. Think about it for the parents who are listening. Careful the things you say. Children will listen. Children will not obey, but they will listen. They're like sponges, people. That's why the media and the music start them at age five. Think about it. Honestly.
Like, that reminds me of a story a guest told me.
Go ahead. You know, sorry.
He now does, him and his wife help people find friendships and relationships and stuff.
That's fantastic.
But just telling me a story. He was at the JCC, and he was talking about dating and all this, and finding to a group of autistic people.
Yeah.
And afterwards, he goes to the head of it and she goes, "How was it?" And he's like, "I don't think they heard a word I said. All they had their heads down and everything." She's like, "You're wrong. They were listening. They may not look at you, but they were listening to you."
Exactly.
And that's
Exactly.
what people don't, and that's
Exactly.
what people don't understand about us is we may
Exactly.
not make eye contact, but we
Yeah.
hear every word you say.
Exactly. And words impact us. In fact, I would like to actually read you just a tiny bit of my, actually, a few of my plays. One is Sorting It Out, which actually went to New York. And I want to read you the monologue that Nick says to the audience. And it's exactly what we're trying to talk about. So basically, it's in scene three. It starts in scene three, and I'll tell you about the play after. But
Well, I'm
okay,
going to ask you about the place, though.
yeah, go ahead. Thank you. But let me start. So basically, all the characters are off. Bob, who's the helper, who's the kind of homemaker or the caretaker of Nick, who is autistic, a middle-aged autistic man. He needs to go to the store. Okay, but Nick is there with the audience. This is what he says. "You've all heard the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Pay attention, as you might find out that words may hurt more than action sometimes." And then the other character comes in, and that's the only time we break the fourth wall where our character speaks. We don't have audience parts like clap along, kids. I hate that stuff as an artist. I hate that participation. But as an audience member, you're a fly on the wall. You're peeking in and to this world that we're only scratching the surface with. Using a play, a one act, 30-minute play, 30 minutes. And you can tell a story in even you can tell a story even in a minute. A good story even in a minute. And that's another thing that people don't understand about writers. I'm like, you don't have to be quote unquote good with English, like write an essay or write a book report to become a playwright. You have to know what people say. You have to understand what people say. And most of what people say, I hate to say, is stupid because the world is stupid. I hate to say that. And I'm not trying to bash this world, but like honestly, I've seen so much crap go down in my high school, in college even. There's a lot of stuff that happens in college that is backdoor business. Like they won't tell the public, but they, you know what I mean? "Oh yeah, we'll take care of the kiddo." And when the door closes, right. That's what I call backdoor business. They basically be nice at the door, but then bang, they base, and that's sad to
Yeah,
anyone.
it is.
But that happens every single day, probably every minute of every single day. And that's why
I
I wrote
mean,
the plays that I do. Go ahead, Rita. I'm sorry.
no, it's all right. So we know what got you into playwriting.
But yep.
Tell me now, let's talk about the plays you've written.
Absolutely. Yes. So I've written three. One is about artists. All three about are artistic based, autism based, with an artistic character in each. And the first play was Sorting It Out, and I basically, sad enough, read, and for the people who are listening, it's based on a true story that happened to me, and I think those are the best kind of stories when something actually, no, it's not based on a book, it's not based on a novel, it's not based on a music soundtrack. It's not based on a movie, which most musicals and plays are, but movies, come on, do something original, in my opinion, of course. But it's based on an experience that happened to me, and only me. I saw it through my ears, my ears, my senses, right? I think those are the best kind of stories, not based on a true story that happened that people know about. That's good. That's more natural than the physical product turning into another physical product, if you know what I mean. A physical entity, you know, anyway, right? But the story goes that, and I'll tell you the story, and it really hits quite deep. But I didn't manage to honestly dwell on the experience. I decided to write a play. I said I had enough. I wanted to write a play. But here's my question to everybody that's listening, and everybody who basically hears this podcast: why would I need to write a play about people being kind when we should know how to treat people? You know what I mean? When we should know how to treat people. It's the simple question to how you were taught, how you were raised, what kind of music to you. It's all the influences, all the crap that's around us. And we forget who we actually are as people inside, who we actually, what we actually want to do. Because most people don't want to know what they want to do. I don't, I'm not in this industry for fame, fortune, and money, fame, popularity. If anybody's in this industry, or if anybody wants to be in this industry as a writer, I'll tell you a few, one thing, you will not make that much money, but you have to love what you do. Yeah, you do it for the love of, not even the craft. I don't need to do it for the craft of writing. I do to the craft of teaching, inspiring, and making people honestly so uncomfortable in their seats that they think about the world around them. And I think another thing is that the best kind of thing, and that's what Sorting It Out has compared to most plays. Most plays are comedy based. Most plays are who kills somebody or jokes, joke after joke after joke, right? Murder mysteries, right? Agatha Christie, Neil Simon, Norm Foster for the Canadian people who are listening. All these, you know, all these great playwrights who I'm not dissing, they're great. But there's very rare plays that make people so uncomfortable and so disturbed and so that it's actually quite sad. And that's what we are lacking in the theater, basically, in my opinion. We are lacking, whether it's Broadway, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, original, we're lacking plays that make people think to the point of, I need to think about my actions around this world now they watch the play. And sometimes it will go in one ear and out the other in an audience member. And to me, that's sad. For the but for the people who are actually listening and actually watching this, like, it's a beautiful thing. It kind of gets back to a ritual, but I don't want to get into that. But it's like better than a flat screen, two TV, kind of two screen TV. You're live with a room of people. You're watching this, almost this dark, eerie event unfold on stage about this young, about this middle-aged autistic man who gets honestly bullied, mistreated, shunned by an ignorant, stereotypical millennial. You guys remember those, right? And you know what I mean, right? For the people who are listening, you guys know. And honestly, and to me, on a side note, they get more stupider every year. I'm sorry to say that, but this generation, I'm 26, and even my generation is purely stupid. And I'm surprised I can talk, like, I can write a play, and I can have the rationale to think about fear, about morals, about how, you know, how to get the, you know, and then people don't even know what they want to do in life. They don't even know who they are in life. I know who I am. I'm, first of all, I'm a child of the creator, number one, for the people who believe. Number two, I am an inspiration to people. And I don't care what anybody says. As long as you don't say, oh, you're so inspiring for me putting a shirt on or brushing my teeth, right? You know what I mean, right? I hate people like that. But I love when people, oh, you would have played. That's so inspirational. Congratulations. I love that. It doesn't give me pride. I don't write plays just to hear that. If people think that, then they're stupid, honestly. But honestly, though, that's why I do this. I want to provoke and inspire change. And going back to the story of Sorting It Out when it actually happened, I was on a transit bus that day, Route 13 out of all numbers, 13. Unlucky number, of course. But that's not my point. Well, I went on the bus, tapped my little card, my bus card with a presto for the Canadians. So it's like a bus card, fare pass, whatever. Sit out at the back of the bus. Was it with the driver? Was one of the younger passengers? He looked a little bit older. So he turned around and he said, he turned back to me. I was at the very back of the bus. He said, I remember you from somewhere. And I don't remember him, of course, but I, you know, and I said, I don't know you from a hole in the wall, man. Like, I don't understand. I could say typical, stereotypical millennial, but I don't usually use man and all these slang words. I don't like it because that's not who I am. And he said, but I remember you. You were with Brandon. Now, Brandon was a person, I knew a bunch of Brandons. Who are you talking about? Me? I didn't say this. But I felt like saying, sir, be more specific. But of course, to get him off my hair, because I don't really like interacting with people because I'm autistic. Yeah, now I remember you. Yeah, of course, of course. You have to play along sometimes, right? So he said, oh, great. Where are you off to today? I said, Community Living Oakville. Now, Community Living Oakville with all the special needs, it's like a special needs hub for the people who, it's a day program, basically, for people with special needs. So the moment I said that, this is his reaction. That's nice. And at the next stop, he walked off the bus. He just looked at the bus driver. He didn't even say thank you. And then at the next stop, he got off into the forest. And I knew it wasn't his stop. And by the way, he looked like a businessman. He looked like nice cream colored button down shirt, like collar shirt, nice cream colored dress pants, like that. This goes to show you, and he was young. He looked like he was in like college age. And that's how, so I was so angry at him that I left community living early that day. And I said, and I walked into my off, I walked into my house, which is this one. I said, Daddy, which is my dad, Daddy, give me a piece of paper, give me a pen, and I'm writing something down. And at the kitchen table, I wrote my first draft of Sorting It Out that day, that night. That was remarkable.
Bravo.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Reed. Of course, but I'll tell you something. It felt like this guy was kind of, quote unquote, following me around, if you know what I mean. Like the words are coming at me. There's a line in Sorting It Out that I would love to hear. It's my favorite line of the play. So Bob, like, you should understand people with autism or spectrum needs. Do you understand? Now, Ed, who's ignorant, who's arrogant and ignorant, he blurts out something. He blurts out, society doesn't understand, so why should I? Think about that. When you guys are born into a society, who do you follow? Yourself or society? You follow the group, right? But in most cases, we should think for ourselves. But of course, the influencers and the influencers, if you guys know what I mean, the influencers, and I'm not just talking about the government, the people who own the government, hint, hint, hint. Yes, yes. Yes, there are people that own the government. Listen to that.
I mean, the biggest problem is this.
Yeah, yeah.
That people don't understand us. They think, a lot of those of us on the spectrum think, oh, we want to blend in.
Yeah,
but yeah. What they don't think is, we weren't, and this was told to me by one of my guests.
Right.
He's like, I wasn't put here to blend in.
Right.
I was put here to stand out. I'm autistic. I'm meant to stand out.
Exactly.
We're different from everyone else. God. Why do I want to be like you, when I can be like me?
I want to be a guy who works 9 to 5, no offense, who works at a grocery store or out of business, when I can actually write a play that can go to New York and I can inspire some people. Give me a break, will you?
Let's talk about that for a minute, Mateo. What was it like to have your play debut in New York?
Good question. So, fantastic. I went to New York. I had the privilege and honor of watching my play, which was the first time ever that I got to see anything of my work live. And what a way to start it in New York. Now, honestly, I wasn't really happy with the New York production, but I was happy with the result. Once I left, I'm like, okay, but the production was okay. It was okay. But once I left, this is what happened. First week, so it was Thursday through Sunday, believe it or not, 2 weeks. Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, and then another Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon for the second week. So it's basically three nights: Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night, and of course Sunday afternoon. So okay, so of course opening night is the Thursday. The preview week when I came in, first of all, the cast was so gracious, so beautiful, and so loving, and some of the nicest people, and some of the most talented people you will ever meet in the theater. Some of
these people. Did you have any choice in choosing who the cast was?
Sadly, no. And that goes down to the director. I don't want to mention his name or what he does, or what company, whatever, but you have the playwright there for a reason. You have the connection for the playwright. Use him. Use him. It's the same thing with the songwriter. If you have the songwriter, it's not, can we use your play? Here's $50, but we'll see you on opening night. That's basically what kind of the director did. Sad. Anyway, but like I said, and actually the original producer, John Paul Mislapis, who lives in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, he actually has hydrocephalus, which is a disability, water in the brain. He's crippled, but he can't walk very well. He's like limited in mobility, but he's such a nice man. He produced Sorting It Out in Oakville, the world premiere where I played Nick, which it was the autistic character. So I actually had to play him in Oakville, the world premiere. And then the fifth production was New York, and that was the only second live production other than the production. He came to New York because he was producing another play that I got him involved in, which is something way down the line that I really don't want to talk about. But he saw the New York production with me. I was with my aunt. I was here. My John Paul was there, and John Paul's stepbrother. And honestly, me and John Paul felt it. If you know what I mean, felt the power of this play. Like, I never thought Like, there's some, I knew I was going to cry. I knew I was going to do that. Absolutely. Like, but not cry and say, oh, I made it. I made it. Going to off of Broadway for 2 weeks is not making it. Going to Broadway for 7 weeks is not going to make it. Think about it. You have to be no. You have to be exposed to extremely the whole world to be known. If in some cases, right? Mm-hmm. Look at the musicians and singers and all that today. They're all constantly on the radio. Most of the songs of today are garbage, in my opinion. Like honestly, I hate that because I hate. Sorry, I apologize. Most of the music today is garbage, and I think. Sadly, it's hypnosis to the young kids. It's talking with a lot of bad stuff in it, like negative impression to the kids. And they play it like there was no tomorrow on the radio. So because people can get used to it and actually listen to this, and go to the concert and experience basically a satanic ritual for the people who actually know what I'm talking about. It's that sad, guys. Why can't we bring more positivity? Or why can't we teach a play like mine with a bit of hope at the end? And honestly, there's a scene in the end where, you know what I mean, right? There's a scene in the end where I don't want to give it away, but it's only with music and visuals. It's a tableau. So the actors.
Right. But in Let's New York, talk a little bit about everything.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Besides Jeff Madsen,
yes,
who else are your inspirations for becoming a playwright?
That's a good question. Jeff Madden was big inspiration. Him and Frankie Valli is another person. So Jeff played Frankie in Toronto and even Australia. He went to Australia for a few months and then he did that show, Jersey Boys again. But that show, Jersey Boys, basically anchored what I do for a living. What I anchored, like, but another person who I dearly love and I believe in is Michael Flatley. He's the choreographer of the original Riverdance. He did Lord of the Dance.
Mm-hmm.
Another person who is very inspiring to young people. And he worked his butt off, like Jeff, and like Frankie. He came from the blue collar as well. And then he became one of the biggest Irish dancing choreographers. And he also talks about integrity, believing in yourself, working hard, never giving up, and all that. And I take those two inspirations, take them to my heart. It's not the music that they do, but it's the integrity that they represent, which a lot of people love it. Love people, celebrities, because they're hot, they're cute, they have which is not really a good song, but you know what I mean.
Right.
But what about their morals? Most people have flaws, right? We all have flaws. That's life. But those two I can bank on because they worked hard to get where they are today. They believed that they could. They honestly, they have so much integrity to the thing, and the work that they do is remarkable. Yes. So the person that comes to mind is actually my uncle, Anthony Tool, actually a musician, country rock artist. I actually found last night. He he comes from Oakville, Ontario, Canada, which is my hometown. He lives in Milton, which is the city beside. Anthony Tool is a up and coming country rock artist. He's a filmmaker and everything, and he told me again early on, this industry this industry is not for the faint of heart. He said, you have to have nerves of steel to get into this industry. And now I know why. Now I know why Jeff told me to do what I needed to do, have confidence. I had to learn it. Just because somebody said, believe in yourself, doesn't mean that I automatically believe in myself, right? Same thing with hard work and never giving up. And that's what today's generation, I hate to say this for the people who aren't listening, who have kids or... That's what the parents, the teachers, everybody are teaching everybody to be lazy. And I hate to say that as a 26 young man. 26, I'm not a politician. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm an autistic man trying to make a change in this world. And it's so sad that people think, honestly, that things can get handed to them on a silver platter. I'll tell you something. John, who was a guy in New York, wanted to originally produce my play in 2021. He decided to produce it in 2022 because we all know what happened, but he never gave up on the opportunity to do it. And that's why New York.
Right. Let's talk a little bit more.
Of course, yeah.
How were your plays received?
And that's where I want to get into this because after I went to New York, I came back and I didn't hear from anybody. So I talked to Giselle, who was one of the cast members, and said, please let me know how the audience liked it. Of course, opening night was sold out, of course, because
congrats.
They were, or of course, mostly for that second.
Now, did your play go from anywhere from New York, or did it just stay in New York?
That's a good question. It just stayed in New York for 2 weeks, but the success of the play was unparalleled. I didn't even expect it. Our producer and director said we probably won't make money. I know why. It's a 25 seat theater. Who's going to play about an autism by a Canadian playwright not known in the New York area? Blah blah blah.
See,
blah.
What's funny is right, what people don't realize. Hit a nerve.
Yes.
Because every parent in the world or in the New York area is probably going to have a child or know somebody or know somebody or somebody who has somebody who's autistic
Or it's disability, exactly.
or a disability. And in order to see how somebody lives as being autistic, it's an eye opener. And I just had a guest yesterday who tells me they have a program in Virginia College called VA Lend. The Lend program is all over the world.
Okay.
And one of the things they do is they place people who want to work who in the industry,
right,
working with those who have disabled, and they put them in the host house.
That's amazing.
And then this way they can open their eyes to what it's like to live with somebody who's autistic or who has a disability, and to get the other side of the coin.
Of course.
And it's an amazing thing.
Read and
I think your play did just that.
Thank you.
It gave people an eye opener to what it's like to live with autism.
And the fact that my play is so eye opening for that, for the opening night, so Friday night got three people. Saturday night, half filled out. Friday, the first filled out performance.
Congrats.
That's the next week. So Thursday night, it was half sold out. Friday night, it was oversold. What that means is we only had 25 seats, 26 people came. I repeat, 25 seats, 26 people came.
Sold out in one extra person.
Right. Exactly. So our producer director quickly decided to get him a chair. Is if we didn't, he would be, you know what that would be called? Standing room only. So thank goodness they found him a chair and he watched it. But I never had that happen. And that was just the second of my four sold out.
Now, imagine if your play would have hit Broadway.
Yeah.
And you're in one of the big Broadway theaters and you sold out. That says you've made an impact in the industry.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Reed. I appreciate that. And the last three shows, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, like I said, were all sold out, including the Friday night that was oversold. So I'm looking, honestly, I would love to collaborate for people to even read my script. And to actually, like, I don't want to change my plays because my plays, like, look at where my plays went. One of them went to New York. It's a half an hour. It's not the best play that I can offer, but it's really impactful. And my goal is to have a lot of stuff. I have a lot of goals in life. I have a lot of ambitions. The pipe dream, one of the pipe dreams is to actually have an artistic cruise line or a cruise line or some sort of place where special needs families can get, like Walt Disney World, but not a theme park. I don't want autism land and Down syndrome. I'm not joking. You know what I mean, right? You know what I mean. I'm not.
Know what? No one to be perfect.
Yeah.
Come see the autistic brain.
Exactly.
Come inside our brain and see what it's like.
Exactly. Nindo, that's funny. But honestly, though, I don't want to be like that because what are we going to have? I don't want to even go in there because that would be insulting.
You know, actually, Mateo, that would be a great play.
What do you mean?
The autistic brain. You'd have people playing different roles of our brain, the ADHD part of the brain, the autism part of the brain, the thinking process.
Yeah.
And it would be one person, the autistic person, and then it would go to what our mind is, that person's mind's thinking. And you see, you're the ADHD person just rambling on and on and on and on.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then the ASD person, it would be, I like this. Mm-hmm. And then you get an idea of what our brain is like.
Exactly. Now, another thing is talking about education. But a lot of people, when they think about quote-unquote education, they think about school, elementary school, high school, and college, and post-secondary internships, all that. I think about the theater. because theater is very educational. It's important. Like I said, you're in a room with other people and you're watching a play unfold and like you're peeking into this world. This play, my plays could be great for students. Again, I would love to do a school tour in my plays. Now, I know my plays are half an hour. All of them are. Two others. One about inclusive employment, which actually had a reading last year in New York, as well, December at the Tank, which actually lost. My John Paul produced it as well. He's my co-producer in a lot of things. He's a lovely, lovely man. And by the way, for the original production, he gave me $5,000 Canadian out of his disability pocket, out of his disability funds. And he's a disabled person himself. He lives in community housing and all that. But just imagine. And he doesn't even think about that. You know what he said? I was helping a friend, Mateo. And that hits me hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, and I'm like, buddy, like, jump on all that. Me, that, I don't know what to say. A person with a disability who's actually worse off than me, no offense, gave me $5,000. He did not know me at the time. He just, let me give you some money.
Your parents must have been shocked.
I was even shocked, yeah. I was shocked. Like my parents never got $5,000 from a disabled person. Never, like, and that's the thing about the disabled market, is it's untapped. So no wonder we're trying to make an impact. We're not trying to knock on the down door.
Now and let's switch like, role. Now let's switch level. From.
Come on, guys. You know what I
now
mean.
Now let's switch from.
Yes.
Theater.
Yes.
And playwriting to design set design.
Yes.
How did you go from playwriting, which is one end of the right. theater world, to the other end of being behind the scenes and designing sets for a play?
Here's the thing, and this is sad. I'm not a quote-unquote official set designer because most set designers need to go to university for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's that stupid, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. I'm autistic. I have a lot of needs. There's two universities that I have to apply for. They're both an hour away in a city, in a major entertainment city in Toronto, which is half an hour to 45 minutes away. And I have all the supports at home. All the, you know, it's just sad that people don't want to even give me a chance or give anybody a chance.
I understand that. I mean, totally. I mean,
I'm sorry.
But like you probably understand as well as it's the job world.
Yeah.
They see, and I've talked to people countless times about this. Mm-hmm. The minute you check that little box that says I'm disabled and you circle autism, it's like, say goodbye. You're not going to hear from them at all.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the minute you don't check it and submit the job, then it becomes, do I tell them anything during my job interview?
Yeah.
Or if they hire me, do I tell them then? Because then the question becomes, did I lie to them to get the job?
Yeah.
And can I get fired for that lie?
Exactly. Now, here's where my third play comes in, which is The Valley of Many. It's about inclusive employment. Let me read you a little something from this. And I want people to listen in on this because it's the truth. Let me find the thing. So let me set the scene. It's the car scene. And basically, there's two people who are businessmen arguing and talking about people with disabilities, okay? Sorry, guys, I apologize.
Just relax, Mateo. Just take it easy.
Sorry.
We're not in a hurry here.
Thanks, sir. You know, you appreciate that. Yeah. But I'll tell you something. I think on this page, I don't know if this is, sorry, but this guy's able, but it was the wait, I promise, I'm just single, next page. So basically, the story goes that this play, so I wrote this basically based on people with disability in the job world. And basically these two businessmen are arguing about hiring people with disabilities, right? And honestly, and this is what one of them says. Yes. So somebody says, so Dexter, who's an arrogant businessman, he's not really want to hire specialists. He said, why would I hire these people? You know what I mean? And the other guy said, give them a chance. It's all about giving people a chance. So Dexter, who's the arrogant guy, he says, listen, in my company, it's about how we can help people make their businesses grow. And I always make money. Hiring those people would bring our company down and crush it. Lester says, first things first, money's not everything. Oh, money is everything, Dexter says. How am I supposed to pay my bills working? Lawson turns to him and says, I guess people especially are asking themselves the darn same question. We are. And ain't that the truth? Of course we are. But people don't think about that. People think about white supremacists who they are just like us, except we, you know, like I said, we're all one. And honestly, like, honestly, just because I have a disability doesn't mean that I cannot do a job. Just because I have
true.
A disability doesn't mean that
true.
I can't even be trained.
That's why, Mateo, that's why more and more big name companies are coming out saying, hey, we now have programs for those who are autistic.
Good.
But the problem is, you got to be autistic and just autistic. Right. The minute you have ADHD and anything else that makes you different, they're not going to take it.
I get it. And that's
because they want the programmers. They want those who have the mind for math.
Of course,
you got anything else that interferes with your knowledge of math or anything else? No.
Now, I'll tell you another thing. With the job market, and this is sad.
What is the job market like in Canada for those who are like you and me?
Sadly, the same as you guys, if not worse, as always. But here's the thing. I hate when these companies, including the U.S., they say, yeah, we would get people with disabilities. But you need a degree to do that. You need a degree to get into a company. Why would you be inclusive when you know that people mostly with higher functioning special needs sometimes cannot even go to university to get the qualification to you? Fucking fools. I'm sorry. But
True. The problem is, it's almost a catch-22, you think about it.
Yeah, exactly.
There are what? I'm not sure about the number, but I'm pretty sure there's a huge percentage of us who can't go to school.
Right.
Who can't be on our own.
Exactly.
Even in the commuter school, can't deal with the classes because the level of the education is a little bit higher than we can handle. You got to be able to deal with other students walking through the hallways, getting to your classes on time.
Exactly. And sadly, I was in special ed for 7 years, but I actually had to go back to school to get my diploma. I didn't an adult school, and they but in our life schools every morning, special ed, I'd go, good morning, everybody. Let's bring your name on the board. Great job. I felt like that's, first of all, that's one waste of my time to drag a person's name would be, you know what I mean? For the people who are low functioning, I understand. I'm very high functioning. I can walk, I can talk, I can think. That's the number one. What's the weather like today? Do we really need to know what the weather is?
It's like
for dramatic effect for the people to think. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I mean, that's why teachers need to go through a program to educate them on how to work with those who are autistic.
Of course.
Australia has already done it.
Bless their hearts.
Two colleges in southern Australia.
Yep. Bless their
that
hearts.
The assistant minister of autism has put forward a whole thing where if you want to get into education, that's great. But part of the curriculum now is you need to take a course in autism
and special needs
to understand how to work with these kids.
Yeah, but honestly, schools, the sad thing is you have these college professors, and I hate the college I mean, or the college that anybody went to, or university professors that are getting top dollar. And they don't even have a teaching degree, most of them. Then we have teachers on the picket line who have teaching degrees, and I want more money. That's unfair.
No, it is. And then what drives me nuts is,
honestly,
I mean, here's a story for you. I was in school. I went for my master's in England.
Right, yeah.
And they know I have a disability advisor. Right. They told all my other teachers that he's got a disability. Mm-hmm. He will be taking on-time testing like all the other kids who are disabled. Right. I have one professor or lecturer who I had trouble with the course, and I go up to him I go, can we have a one-on-one talk about the course and go over some of the material so I kind of get it? He's like, I can't do that. If I do it for you, I have to do it for everybody. I'm like, but here's the thing. It's in my record that I am somebody who is disabled and you got to do it. I don't care if you can't, what you say about everyone else. It is in my record that you got to do it. And he's like, I tell you again, if I do it for you, I got to do it for everyone. I'm like, well, whatever. And I was on top of him every freaking time until he talked with me. And then I still didn't get it.
Well, I'll tell you something. Not that you have to lie to the student, but they don't. But the professors don't even have to tell the students that I'm meeting with you. Honestly, like you can have a one-on-one meeting and not tell any of the freaking students. Do it, you know, do it on like Zoom, do it on the phone, do it in, like what, like, you know. But that's what people don't think about. They don't want to go the extra mile. It's a me-centric society today. A me-centric society.
I mean, I get what you're saying. These professors think, hey, I gave him my time in class. Why should I give him extra time elsewhere?
I give him my money. We all do, right? It's a business at the end of the day. But it's also learning. Sadly, it's a business. And I say that not lightly, because they, at the end of the day, it's a money-making business. But the on the other side of the coin, we have teachers, like I said, who have sometimes a college diploma from that actual school and from my actual program that don't even know a thing about teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break.
Now let's switch gears here.
Okay.
Let's go back to theater and everything.
Yes. Yep.
Do you really think you talked about how you want the theater to help teach with become a teaching tool?
Yeah, of course.
Let's
yes.
talk about that. How do you see that helping? Mm-hmm. Are you just talking about teaching about autism, or are you talking about teaching in everything general?
Well, for the people who think that theater is not a teaching tool, it is. Because, like I said, people are learning just from the mannerisms that the character who is autistic have. I have the autistic character who I wrote Stimming, which a lot, this is a paperclip and twist tie. This is black twist ties, and this is a paperclip. I do this in the play. I stim in the play. And of course, Ed, who's our arrogant stereotypical, what's he doing? And is actually asking the questions of the audience, like, what is this guy doing? But we don't tell the audience. Here's the greatest thing about the play. We don't tell the audience, oh, that's stimming. That comes in The Valley of Many, which is a later play. But because at the end of the day, I want the audience to figure out what exactly he's doing and let him research and let them go home, think about the play, being so moved. I actually want to help these kids. Mom, hey, Mom, guess what I watched today? I watched an amazing play. Or Dad, or Grandpa, Grandma, whatever. Whoever you live with. Caregivers galore, right? But like, and that's the thing. Theater touches hearts, minds, but it also makes people think. And I think that's one of the best things about my work is it goes forth change. And it does that so in, especially in sorting it out with the dialogue, because the dialogue gets so harsh that Ed says, if you think I'm inconsiderate, I think your friend the R word. I don't want to say it, but I actually put that into play. Not to make people uncomfortable, not to make people get angry, to prove a point, because it's so damn happy today. And I played Nick, so I didn't hear the audience react, the big audience, but I heard a few reactions for the audience because I was on stage. But when I go, I said, don't call me that, it's part of the play. He said, I already did. And that's the point where I smack my head, oh, and I have a meltdown, and actually lunge and push him, and then there's a fight. And we have to, and the fight is broken up by a call from Ed's doctor, who Ed gets something that I do not want to give away. And that's a spiritual humbling of what the play is. And I think, but I'll just tell you this, he gets something worse than Nick, knock on wood, not knock on wood, but you know what I mean? He gets something worse than Nick. And people say, well, that doesn't happen in real life. I know, but of course it's a play, I have to over-dramatize it. And the reason that Ed is so, and people say, well, Ed is so over the top. You know why? Because I feel, as autistic people, we feel it 10 times more than the friggin' neurotypical world. And that's why Ed's so over the top. And by the time after Ed gets that, and people gasp and feel, like literally people gasping, like it was a big slap in the face of the audience, which is a beautiful thing at the theater. My, not flat people, but you know what I mean? And
yeah,
quote unquote, metaphorically speaking, if you know what I mean, then.
All right. Anyways.
Yes. Sorry. Then we have two other scenes. And by the end of the play, people were weeping in their seats. I'm not kidding.
Really good. I mean,
thank you.
When you hit people's emotions, that means you hit that nerve that they under things registered in their mind of what's going on.
Of course. And most plays don't do that. Like I said, most TV shows, most nothing doesn't do that. Basically, it's a whole bunch of lies in this world. The play tells the truth, but the play tells the truth in an honest, like I said, I hate to say this, but an uncomfortable and disturbing way to make the audience understand, to come to the realization with all these characters that it's okay to have a disability. It's okay to be different. Mm-hmm. I will be, and Nick is a line, I will always be there for you. I will always truly be there. And Nick, and that's basically the last line before the last scene happens. So,
right.
And
now,
I would like to just say, I would love to do this play in schools. I would love to do a huge school tour. If anybody's listening, please contact me. I would love to do a collaboration with a school tour or even just a high school production. It's like I say, it's not my best work. There's a lot of flaws in my play. There's a lot of flaws in everything. But the heart of the play is honestly taking a mirror and holding it to society, saying, this is what you see, but this is what we actually experience. Not even see, this is actually what we experience on a day-to-day life. And I think that's pretty powerful, in my opinion. Go ahead, sorry.
Do you have any plans for any new plays in the works?
That's a good question. I have tons of ideas, tons of ideas. One of them would be about bullying and about YouTube videos, about how people just take YouTube videos on the street and basically go up to people pranking them, which I think is awful. Awful that people do that. Not only to families, but to anybody. Why would you prank a quote-unquote civilian coming out of a damn store? Are you that nuts? What is it today? Salted peanuts? Or just prank? You know what I mean, right, guys?
Yeah. And finally, Mateo, how can people find out more about you and all the plays you've written?
Yes. So I would love to link you with my website, and you can put it on the bottom. So it's aboutme.com/MateoEsposito or something like that. If I can give you the link, I would love for you to share it. And I would love to.
I'll put the link in the bottom.
Please do. And my email is on the bottom. So please, please, if you like this conversation, I wouldn't mind being on more podcasts. I wouldn't mind for people to collaborate with me. I don't mind. I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm a set designer. I'm a playwright. Let's do something together. Let's change this world. Instead of demonizing this world, let's change it, guys. What does it take to put a little seed of kindness in somebody and make a change?
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Mateo Esposito, singer, songwriter, playwright, one hell of an amazing guy. Thank you, Mateo.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, guys. Hope you enjoyed it.